Sorry.
You're fine.
Hey, start over again. Start over again. I'll put this in the blooper reel. Welcome back to my channel. Wendy Renee here. So excited to have you back. Today, we're going to take a break from our usual content, and I want to introduce you to a very inspiring woman named Jennifer Peavy. Jennifer is an author. She's going to talk about groupthink, mindset changes, corporate America, how to believe in yourself, and you'll find yourself in her story. She's an extremely inspiring woman. So if you are coming from the background that I come from, whether it's narcissistic abuse or high control religion, I want you to know that you are heard, what you are feeling is valid. And if I'm watching this, you are struggling with that feeling of having missed opportunities since you weren't allowed to go to college or pursue a career, I want you to listen to Jennifer and I want you to feel inspired, because it is my belief and the belief of many others. And despite the fact that you do have missed opportunities in your background, that does not mean that there's nothing left for you. So let's talk to Jennifer and see what she has to say. Before we begin, I want to thank you so much for liking, sharing, and subscribing. Our community is growing so much on this channel, and it just proves that there are more people finding health and wellness and positivity on the other side of narcissistic abuse and high control religion. Don't forget, we have TikTok, we have Instagram, we have all different platforms where we have interesting conversations. Jennifer, it is such an honor to have you on this show. Why don't you introduce yourself and give us a little bit of your background and what brought you here?
Thank you, Wendy. I am so glad to be here. Yes, Jennifer Peavy. I am a author of Natural Reflectors. It's a book I put out in August, and a lot of it came out of a journey that I had during the pandemic. I had left corporate America burnt out, and I really wasn't sure what I was going to do from there. Created some structure in my life, and I found that structure allowed me to find some peace and joy. I was really burnt out. I mean, that's just an overused term, but I really had no direction, and I knew I was easily susceptible. And the beauty of the pandemic is it gave me space to incubate what was going on. And I created this structure and, again, found this peace and joy and started sharing it with others, and then was advised to put out this book. So that's my hope, and that's why I'm here.
Well, honestly, we are so excited to have you. Can you talk a little bit about what burnout actually looks like? Because we do use that term often, and it could be personally for you, but I know I've also used that term. So can you talk a little bit about what burnout actually is and what are some of the signs?
Sure. The World Health Organization defines it as an extreme exhaustion, where you just are lower in your productivity and you create a mental distance between yourself and whatever is causing that burnout. And I like to add a fourth level to that. I think there's a lack of trust. You know, if you're in the middle of this, you have this feeling that no matter what you do, it is not going to make a difference. And you almost give up or do give up. Ultimately, I also think burnout is stress that's unmanaged, because there's no way we can get around stress. And there's even good stress. I mean, the reason we laugh is because we actually are under stress and we're releasing that stress. And there are people who love to public speak or go on podcasts. And, you know, there's a certain level of good stress that goes with this. But when we have bad stress, it's unmanaged and it just accumulates and accumulates and accumulates, that is where we end up in this space of burnout. My particular burnout was because I was coming out of corporate America, and it really stemmed from the lack of feeling a sense of control. I had a lot that was going on, and I had no control over what projects I had or how I was able to implement those projects. And so it made me despair on whether anything I could do made a difference. And there would be days I could rally and I would try something. But yet again, no, this isn't right. This is wrong. This is not going this way. You need to do it that way. And it felt like what I needed to do was just turn my brain off and become a machine. And that lack of control was something that just ate at me. It was like an acid that was in that space that just wouldn't, I could not get away from it.
And it's like it became your personal identity.
Yes.
And it sounds like it may have even attacked your self-worth.
Oh, absolutely. And my image, my self-esteem, my trust. There was an awful lot of me that said, well, why do you keep doing these things? And I didn't think I could trust myself in, no matter what I was doing. So it was a personal and professional place that I ended up that I just needed to distance myself from to be able to process it. And the pandemic gave me that.
The pandemic gave a lot of people a lot of wake up calls. Of all the people that I've spoken with, there's people who are, you know, they're relearning their value, and they're revisiting their relationships with people in their lives and the relationship with their livelihoods. So when you decided to leave corporate America, it sounds like before you got into it, it sounds like it was more of an indoctrinative process that you got into it, and then slowly but surely it eroded away. And you mentioned in pre-production about busyness. And right. I'm really fascinated with this topic as it pertains to our audience. And for those of you who are listening on the podcast or in the video, I'm sure you can relate to what Jennifer is talking about, for the reason that in the organization, there is this sense of duty and busyness to the point where you let go of yourself, your personal care, you let go of your family, and you have to put the organization first. So Jennifer, what is it that you can speak to on that topic? And I'm fascinated with your viewpoint on this.
And that is exactly what corporate America is asking out of their employees. That exact thing that you just said is you give up your self-care, you give up your family. Burnout is a badge of honor right now, that you must make yourself constantly busy. The last job I had, if your calendar was full to the point that nobody could get into it, or you needed to extend your day from 7 to 7, that was a sign of that you were important. And that seems to be feeding this, that we must be always busy. My aha or my epiphany was busy doesn't mean productive. You know, we could talk about whether it's healthy or not, but even when I go back and say, wait a minute, we're not actually doing anything. We're just keeping this machine running is what was going on. And I found that I was getting up every day and pushing, and some people call it the grind. But I'm not really sure that it is necessarily the best way to be productive. That was one of my questions during the pandemic. What if we were more successful, if we were less stressed? Not even saying burnout, just the stress, because if we're trying to manage it. I can also, for some of your listeners, I can also say that this was not necessarily the first time that I had come across this idea of I must constantly be busy. I was brought up that you must be constantly busy. There was no just sitting in front of the television. You must be actually cross-stitching or doing something else or knitting or doing something else. The same thing with the church that I was a part of. The attitude was we must have activities all the time, so that basically you're either home or you're at church, in my case, or at school, or asleep. You know, it was, you shouldn't have anything else to do. And so therefore
there's a misuse of scripture too that most religions use. It's always plenty to do in the work of the Lord. And yes, if you're not doing something, you could be doing something better. Find something to fix, find a way to improve yourself. Otherwise, yeah, at the end, that's what's going to matter the most, whatever the end looks like for people, I guess.
But self-care just is completely thrown out as part of that. The idea of taking time to care about yourself, to make sure you got the right amount of sleep, or the attitude that I was brought up with is you should just be inherently healthy. There's no reason to have to exercise or worry about what you eat or whether you're drinking enough water or any of that type of stuff. You just should be inherently healthy, and therefore, you know, focus all your energy towards this busyness. And 90% of the busyness was with the church. My other busyness was with class. And I think there was a level of perfection, at least in my upbringing, that drove that busyness. Therefore, nothing was ever good enough. And so therefore, you had to continue doing that. And it's interesting, not this Christmas, but the Christmas before, I actually gave my parents the gift of StoryWorth, which is this idea where they send you a question every week, and then they would write a story based upon their memories of that. And there was one question on what was your mother like when you were a child. So this is my parents answering the question about their parents, so my grandparents. And the line that my mother starts her story with is, my mother was always busy. And it was very interesting to see that after I had written this book and after I'd gone through all of this, because she and I have never discussed this. But in the story, I knew my grandfather had had a heart attack in his early 30s. My mother was about 9 years old when all of this was going on. And it was not that bad of a heart attack, but he had two or three others throughout his 30s. And my grandmother always worried that emergency personnel were going to come into her home and it would be a mess. And so she thought this might happen in the middle of the night. So every night before she went to bed, she would clean up the house and make sure it was perfect. She would iron the sheets on the bed to make sure there would be no wrinkles if the emergency personnel came. She would iron my grandfather's underwear so that if this happened while he was on a business trip, nobody would see anything amiss in his personal belongings. And my mother was 9 during all of this. So I now I understand a whole lot more why there was this busyness, but also this level of perfection that she was looking for. But I know that I carried it with me, and it made me very vulnerable to this idea in corporate America that I must be busy and that everything I was doing was not good enough.
Mm-hmm. And you probably are in competition with yesterday. Always. How did you do yesterday? So tomorrow, if you're just kind of taking a breath, but yesterday I was busy yesterday, and it just kind of seems like the vicious cycle.
Yep. And that was probably the biggest thing during the pandemic, was not so much the idea of what was I going to do, because I did go into the pandemic unemployed. So part of this structure was trying to figure out what I was going to offer, who I wanted to be. But it was fighting the voice in my head that said, you're not doing anything. You didn't accomplish enough. What are you going to do? This literal panic of, oh my God, we're not going to make it. We're going to lose everything. And thinking the worst of what was going to happen. And so a lot of that time was trying to talk to that person and understand what she needed and what she needed to hear. But then also trying to get those nerves to calm down and increase that amount of self-trust. And that was part of what the structure did for me.
So it sounds like one of the biggest things you needed to do for yourself was a mindset shift. So you hit, so to sum up, you hit burnout. The question is, did you enjoy what you were doing in corporate America and then you hit a wall, or were you not enjoying it and then you're thinking that I need to do something, I just don't know what that is?
There was always a nudging from inside about this is not what I want. Now, whether it was what I was doing or whether I, you know, how I felt about accomplishing it, because a lot of what I did was at the very beginning of projects, a very fuzzy, innovative front end. So it didn't happen often that I saw completion, which is difficult. So I was always at the beginning. I'm the idea person. So that always sat there with me saying, oh, that's why I don't feel this way. I don't feel good about it, is because I'm not seeing things to completion. Because I'm back here, and then you hand it off to somebody else who's better at the implementation type of thing. That always allowed me to push away that nag that said, oh, this is not what I want. Oh, it's because it's not turning out the way you want. But if we push just a little bit more, if we just try a little bit harder, we'll finally get there. I wouldn't say I was ever happy. In fact, recently I've gone through and I've wondered, or during the pandemic with this blank sheet of paper, trying to understand what I really wanted to be. What did I really want? So not only having a conversation with the one that was saying, oh my God, you got to do everything. But the other one who's saying, or the other one that had been forgotten. The one that had always just submitted to the busyness and to the perfection and just didn't speak up anymore. Trying almost like a little bird, trying to get the bird to come out and talk to me. Part of what I did with my structure was I was able to spend time reflecting on what I had done just in a small bite and give myself a moment of saying, look, you did it. Isn't that amazing that you got that done? And breaking things, enormous things, into small bites and being able to celebrate, which is something I was horrible at prior to this, but celebrating those small moments of success. And then only concentrating on that one bite. And then I would feel like, oh, I can accomplish that. And then saying, I did accomplish it. And some of it, I would make sure that it wasn't perfect. Maybe I didn't, or I would make sure my expectations didn't want perfection. I said, all I needed to worry about was that one brick. Well, okay, so if I didn't lay it right, well, then tomorrow I'll take it out and lay it over again. You know you can do this. Then occasionally with reflection, then I would back up and then look at the whole wall and say, look at how much is happening, and claim that there was progress. If I had that progress and I was able to claim it, then I was able to trust that something that the nag would show up and go, ah, the kitchen's messed up, or, you know, you still haven't gotten to that project. I'd say, you know, but we've gotten all these other things done. And when we go back to reflecting, I can decide that I'm being nagged about could be brought up in high priority. But for right now, I'm only dealing with this one brick. And I'm going to do well with this one brick. And then when it's time to pick the next brick, okay, well, then we could talk about changing or doing something different.
So you were looking at how far you've come, not necessarily how much further you have to go. I was actually just going to do, I have a recent video that I'm creating content for on counting the wins. For the majority of people in our audience, we tend to look at how much work we have to do as far as unraveling all of these deep-seated belief systems that are entrenched within us that we need to keep trying. One of the biggest things when people leave high control religion or a narcissistic relationship, and I heard you touch on this earlier, was that where are you going to go? You need me. Yes. So when we unravel those things, can you speak to what that looked like for you to suddenly, maybe not so suddenly, say, I need the money or whatever it was that you may have needed at that time. Mm-hmm. What did it look like for you to say, I don't need this. And I'm going to prove to myself that I only need myself.
And that is very real. I don't know how many of my friends that are still in corporate, it's not that we don't talk, but they don't take what I'm doing seriously. And a lot of that is because you can't do that. The attitude is you cannot do this outside of corporate. There's no way this is what you're supposed to do. But you know, 80% of Americans are in small businesses. Corporate America is not the majority of people, but yet that is still a very pervasive culture is saying that this is the way a lot of people, just because they're large type of thing. But is exactly what you said. I probably spent at least 6 to 9 months with the assumption, or I left and then I took a contract position with a university. Still assuming I must be employed by somebody else. And that was a huge assumption. And there are many times people said, because of all my ideas and all of this stuff, they said, you know, you really should go out on business on your own. And decades, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. Partly because I had all these ideas, but I never saw it to completion. So I was under the assumption I could not. And part of that's because of the way corporate was set up, because you'd silo this and then give it over and throw it over the wall and silo it to the next thing. So I did not believe that I could do all of that. I could or manage a business. And sometimes I think, oh, I don't want to do HR. I don't want to do all those things.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot to pick all that up. But I do remember a day, and I couldn't tell you which one it was, but let's just say 6 to 9 months into not being employed, where I had time to actually listen, that I made the conscious choice to say, this time I'm going to save myself. Yes, it would be easier for me to go jump into a corporate position. You know, they call them golden handcuffs. You get a decent amount of money, which actually is getting lower and lower, particularly depending upon what your age is. Yes, there's this whole set of benefits. And yes, there's all these other things that make you feel secure. But when they're asking for 60 to 70 to 80 hours a week, you really start looking at that going, if I'm going to work that hard, why am I not doing it for me? Part of the way I dealt with it, though, which may be one reason it took a little longer, was I decided I wanted a portfolio. So I was going to have these multiple income streams. And then therefore, if one of them fell off, because that was in the back of my mind, that whatever I did for myself, some of these businesses or some of these ventures were not going to work. And that's probably a great deal of truth, but I wanted to have multiple ones. Some of them were going to do better than others at certain times. So I was in this fuzzy front end trying a bunch of stuff for about a year. I think when I started trusting myself is when I got 2 years in and I still was going. There was some debt, but not a huge amount of debt. It was reasonable. And I could see that I was making it little by little. And now I've gotten to the point that this year, I don't think I'm going to have to borrow a dime. So I can now sit here and say, okay, I've made it to this point. So now, you know, the next thing is, okay, let's pay off the little bit of debt. And, you know, there's this growing thing, but taking them in small steps. I also shifted my mindset from that comfort and that security to the idea of, for a while, was surviving. Okay, how do I survive today? And a lot of it went around as much self-care as it was monetarily. It was a lot about how I felt about things, because if I was less stressed, I was more successful. I actually would get more done at higher quality and then be able to talk to people about what I had to offer and be able to sell that to them. Because I find a lot of people are very stressed in their positions, and what they need are people who help them, that calm them down.
Right.
That they know they can trust that I'm going to take care of it. And I think that's why it's now happened. I've proven not only to myself, but I've proven to them that you can.
Well, history has also shown that the 40-40-40 is a broken system. You know, yes. You work 40 hours a week for 40 years for 40% into retirement, which has been proven time and again that this is just, again, a broken system. A large majority of our audience, and I'm really grateful you're speaking about this, because there is a large majority of our audience who we were not allowed, and that's the word I use, we were not allowed to actually get education, to pursue a career.
Yep.
And that being said, people who now are out of it, they feel like there's a lifetime of missed opportunities that they could have gotten in corporate America, or they could have gone to college. And granted, those are rites of passage, and those are experiences that we would have loved to have been able to experience in our lifetime. You being on the opposite end of someone who got out of it, what is something you can say to those of us who really never got to experience that, but now we are in our 30s, 40s, and 50s, maybe even older, and we want to make something of ourselves secularly, financially, but feel that we needed that safety net to feel like we belong in the working world?
I completely understand that. We could say it, you know, years of regret. My first degree was in engineering because my father was an engineer. And it was natural for me just to do it. I was okay at it. But here again, this is, you know, a life of privilege is saying, but I wasn't happy with it. I always felt like I was not bringing all of me to the table, that there were so many other things that I could have brought there to the table. And this is how I ended up with this innovation area, these fuzzy front ideas. And then I went into design, because then I was dealing with how people were engaging with technologies and what did they do with it and what mattered to them. And I found that part fascinating. The irony of where I am right now, granted, in corporate, that piece of paper means a whole lot. But now it means nothing. Really, when it comes down to it, I actually have never used my chemical engineering degree. Even immediately, I was an engineer, but I was in mechanical engineering and I was communicating with chemical engineers. And so I sat between groups of people who did not communicate with one another. Even when I, after the degree in design, I was communicating with technical people to creatives. And so I was constantly looking for where I could fit in. And I think that's what I would say to you, to your audience, is it is a piece of paper and it does grease some things, at least for older generations. And I'm in my 50s myself. So the same thing is, this is what I was brought up you needed. But this day and age is a little bit different. It's the way that at least millennials have started it, and the way I'm looking at Gen Z on the way they survive is very, very different. Right now, one of my greatest sources of income is Airbnb. Who needs a degree to run an Airbnb? You know, but it does help that I never had confidence before to do that. Even though I have this design degree that's all about experience, I know what a good experience is. And it comes down to this idea of, okay, well, I have to clean and I have to order and I have to look at things and putting all that together. The whole idea of social media. So the book, right now, because of the way Amazon does things, and Amazon is 50% of the distribution of books, this whole world of hybrid and self-publishing, it, yes, there are still the five that do the traditional publishing, but there are plenty of people out there writing romance novels. And if you can get a dollar per novel, you know, there are wonderful ways that are relevant to the majority of people out there that you can put things through. And so, you know, I spend a lot of time on social media. Yes, it may be helpful if you've had some classes in it, but you even look at what Google's doing now. In 6 months, you can get a Google certificate that's equivalent of a 4-year college degree in specific tasks. So, and there are particular things on dealing with Google. So it really depends upon who you are and what you want to do. But there are so many options that were not around 30 years ago that it's almost not expected. And then the other thing I worry about, particularly since I do work at a university with students, is how many of them are having to pay off their loans anyway. Yes. And whether they are able, they're able to do it. Gen Z is not really sure about whether they need to be doing this or not, mm-hmm. particularly if they have to run their own businesses.
So for people who, like yourself, have changed their life, if you can give yourself advice, just maybe 5-6 years ago, or even shorter before the pandemic, what would you say to yourself? What would you say to that Jennifer a couple of years ago who was in a state of flux, kind of cared what people thought of her, and at the same time needed to have a mindset shift? What would you say to her? Because she's listening right now.
So I think the big thing is to take some time to listen to what you really want. And part of the issue is your mind will logically lie you out of anything. It will, your mind will do that to you, particularly for those of us that have gone through systems that have taught our minds to think certain things. Right. But your body will never lie to you. And so part of what I ended up having to do was spend time listening to the physical sensations in my body. You know, we can say feelings, but everybody thinks emotions. And those are tied together. But spending time listening to what my body says. And I have learned it. And there's a group of us that we talk about it. So, okay, how do you feel fear? And how do you feel anger? And the big thing, at least fundamentally, is where do I tense up? And when do I relax? And it's, I will ask people, how do you feel about something? And they'll tell me what they think. And I think if I were to talk to that person five or six years ago, is to stop and listen to my body's physical sensations and learn that language, because it will never lie to you and it will tell you how to make your life the best it is. When you're interacting with people and trying to figure it out if you're being manipulated, or if one of the hardest questions that I always have to answer is, well, what do you want? I go silent, because for so many years I wasn't allowed to have an opinion. And so being able to have that conversation with myself and get her to the point of speaking to me and talking to me, but then learning her language, and that gained her trust. Again, just like if I was trying to get a deer or a bird to come eat out of my hand, it's a very similar thing. And I think if I had done that earlier, I would have believed in myself earlier, and I would have taken more chances on myself. And I very likely would have decided that I am the one that needs to save myself, as opposed to looking for somebody else to do it. And that is pervasive in my relationships, in my employment, my self-care, you know, whether you get a doctor to take care of you. And it's not that we shouldn't have a doctor, but, you know, there are things that I can do for myself.
You are one of the most inspiring people I think I have spoken to in a very long time, especially because one of the things that I find extremely endearing about you is you are pulling from life experience. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that it seems to be one of life's greatest teachers. You cannot mm-hmm. get a degree in life experience. And So what does life look like for you now? What do you do? And how is there a contrast between what you were then and how you are now?
So right now, everything is based on what I have set out to do. Mm-hmm. What are my intentions? 100%. Now if I were to dream, I wouldn't say it's ideal, but I cannot complain. Everything that I have going in my life right now, I am the one who chose to do it. Some of it was a matter of, okay, I think here's an energy, here's an opportunity. I probably won't renew it when it comes around again, but there it is. Right. There is a lot of self-care in my life. Every morning I get up and I have a practice where I spend time checking in with myself. Checking in with the divine, checking in with my physical body. Where am I? And that anchors my day. I wouldn't say I'm not a morning person. I do wake up early, but it's nice for me to have that. I cherish that time to myself. And that's the time period where I say what needs to be said to myself, like, oh, I really didn't like what you did yesterday, or I am upset about this, or I really love that. to also saying things to myself that need to be heard, like, you know what, you did a really good job yesterday. And those types of things help me throughout my day. The other thing that I find really important about that is I take a moment to think about what I need for that day to nourish me. And that's part of how I built my self-trust was if my little girl said, I need more laughter. You've been watching way too much Designated Survivor and that's just too intense. I need some laughter. Well, then I am going to fulfill that for that day. And we're going to watch Night Court or we're going to watch something else. Or we're going to spend time playing with the puppy and make sure that there's a lot of laughter there. So if I hear it, I need to respond immediately and build that self-trust.
Especially love the fact that you redirected your need for external validation that at one point you had. I really love because of most people who have been through what our audience has been through, there is this persistent need of external validation because you're taught to push your intuition down. You're taught to not trust yourself. So yep. That external validation of, am I doing the right thing? Is this good enough? You're looking for that gold sticker on your work. And I love the fact that you check in with yourself. You know, yesterday wasn't that great of a situation, but today we're going to do better. And inner child work is something that I am so unbelievably passionate about. I'm really glad you spoke to that.
And I will say it's still a work in progress. You know, it still happens there. And I won't say that external validation doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. I just make sure it's not over 50 and it's not 50% or 75% of what I need. Definitely.
Well, we all need that. But for example, you mentioned social media. So if somebody gives you a good comment or a negative comment, you take both with a grain of salt.
Oh, yeah.
You don't focus on either one and let it control your day, you know?
Absolutely.
And if you need external validation, it's the source of that validation that's important. You're not going to ask some random person who doesn't know you or truly have your best interests at heart. That's the key there. Not asking some random person in the grocery store, does this look okay? Is this a good color for me? You know, it's who, not the what that matters.
The irony with a book is I am looking for strangers.
You know?
Isn't that funny? So I've had, I'm done with the friends. They are done with the book. It is now time for me to find complete strangers. Well, did the complete strangers like this book or not?
Which is a beautiful segue into your book, by the way.
So yeah, the book came out of my journey on setting up this structure for myself. And I call it personal process development. But I did intentionally have times of reflection and times of action. And that's the premise of what I was doing. But what I also did was look to nature on how to put those two things together. And so that's a lot of what the book is about is, you know, why should we be looking at this cult of action and looking at this busyness for busyness sake and how can we can get out of that? And then how we are going to create a design a life that we love. Then there's a whole set of principles on how to look to nature and how we can glean those learnings from nature. And then finally, how do you apply those to your life? And that's one of those when you were saying earlier, what would I say to my 5 or 6 year old or younger self? A lot of that is about prototyping things. Try a little something, reflect on it, come back and go another iteration. I think I spent a lot of time going, oh, we're going to get this all done at once. But this idea of these iterative cycles and just try a little bit, take a little bite, like that one little brick. What I'm working on now is actually the workbook, the original idea that I had on what would this look like if somebody were to do it. I do think the big thing about your own personal process development is it's unique to you. It's what resonates with you, where you are. Nature may be a source of inspiration. I think it's a great source, but it may not resonate with everybody. But being able to take time to think about, like right now in January, I say January is for dreaming. Where do you want to be in December? Not next week. But we just came out of December and you know how you felt then. How do you want to feel next December? And so again, those physical feelings, what do you want to be true about it? Who do you want to be and what do you want to be when it comes there? And it helps you try to understand what you want to focus on for the year. A little bit different than resolutions, because resolutions I find are always very negative and putting down what you're doing. But in this case, it's about growing and who you've always dreamt of being or what you have dreamt to have in your life. And then what kind of steps could you take? Maybe it's 12 steps, you know, for the 12 months and say, this month I'm going to take that little bite and this is what I'm going to work on. But you'll be amazed at where you will be next December and be able to look back and say, look, I did it. So that's a lot.
Now you have the freedom to do it when you unravel all of those negative toxic thought processes that are kind of indoctrinated into you, you have the freedom to be able to do those things and plan your life. I think sometimes we think we're old and we have that fixed mindset as opposed to a growth mindset.
Yeah.
And I love how your book and everything you have been through is promoting a growth mindset, regardless of age, regardless of, there's always an opportunity to change your life and be intentional about it.
And it's never too late to actually get to where you wanted to be. And ultimately, the reason I'm doing all of this was because I just wanted to be happy. That was all I was looking for. And that is the core of what I do, is I make decisions based on what is it going to take to be content and happy. And it becomes very fundamental and tangible. How well do I sleep? You know, who am I spending my time with? What am I working on? How long am I working on that?
And not gauging our happiness, because we're in the social media era, not gauging our happiness on the content of other people.
Right.
I think sometimes we tend to do that. We think, well, they look happy. What are they doing? They look pretty. What are they eating? I'll eat what they're eating. I'll have what they're having. And it's not always the case.
No. And it, sometimes it's a all or nothing. It's like, oh, I've got to get rid of all gluten. Well, just because you got rid of gluten doesn't mean, you know, and I found out, no, actually I need gluten.
I need gluten. I need carbs. I recently read this wonderful book also. It's called Stop Fixing Yourself. And I think there's also, in addition to busyness, I think there's also this culture in the last 2 years or so of constantly, I mean, there is fixing yourself and personal development. And then it gets to a point where it's, if you're constantly looking for ways in which you need to grow, you're never going to grow, because you're always in this place of fixing yourself to the point where you're always going to be looking for the bad.
Well, and I would even say, putting those two together, it's this mindset that we are machines, that this is not a divinely made thing.
Right.
That this is a robotic machine. And if I put in these number of pills and if I do these number of things, then I'm going to get a certain outcome. And it's not true. There's a very holistic thing going on here. There's flesh and there's spirit and there's emotions and heart. And, you know, it's balancing all of that and understanding all of that. And I feel like that, not just the busyness, but the idea of what we eat. Oh, if I just get rid of, or my mother was like, I'm only going to eat salmon. And I'm like, we know that's not right. If we only eat one thing, we know this is not right. So, you know,
you tend to control things when things feel out of control.
Yep. And I think that's where busyness comes from, is we're trying to control something.
Mm-hmm. And some of the most laid back people I know, like my father is in his 70s and he's retired, and he said he has the mindset of, I'll sleep when I'm dead. But when we're around him, he lives in New Jersey and I'm in Florida. When I'm around him, he's always looking for something to do, something to fix, something to do, something to be busy. Jennifer, I want to thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom and giving us all of your gems of truth. And I know that our audience is going to be so delighted. And for those of you who want to reach out to Jennifer, all of her contact information and her book, please get it. It's wonderful, is in the description box. And Jennifer, we'd love to have you back on at another time. We'll see how your book is going, and maybe there'll be a volume two. That would be wonderful too. Quick question. Can you tell me what is going on behind you? Because it's beautiful. And I know we have a lot of artists in our audience who are very curious what that
might be. Absolutely. This was actually one of my pandemic exercises as well, is I wanted to get into string art. I've always dreamt of being a working artist. And that was one of those, oh, you'll never make money, so don't do it. So I spent time making, my intent was 100. I made 50. So I got halfway through it. Different pieces of string art. And so that's what's behind me here, is a number of pieces. And I can pull one out. And since we've got a recording, you can see the nails and then the thread itself. And the idea was, I actually ran making these through my structure on, okay, well, how would I make this? What would it look like if I put a business together? Little things like, I wanted the nails to be dark or black so that all you saw was the string against the black fabric. And so that... there were a number of iterations on how I would do that. And then I'd say, oh, this worked or that didn't work. Like, for example, I could buy nails that were black, but that was more expensive. Or I could paint the nails, but then I had to wait for them to dry. So it was taking small bites and figuring it all out. So
it looks like it may have been so wonderful for the mind to do that kind of work.
And definitely something that I could say, oh, I got it done. Look, look, that one got done. Yeah, and then that one got done. It was definitely very validating to put that.
You know, I feel that about showering in the day. Like, you know what? I think if all I did today was breathe, that's a win for me. If all I did was open up my eyes, that's a win for me. I'm counting the wins. And I think we need to do more of that.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Well, we're going to have you back on. I'm so thankful to have you on. I find you very inspiring. And thank you so much for being part of this project we're doing on this channel.
I am so glad to be here, Wendy. And I look forward to hearing from anybody on anything they want to discuss.
Thank you again, Jennifer. We'll catch up with you next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for watching the show. And if you want to be on the show, feel free to contact me at wendyrenee@gmail.com or wendyrenee.com and hit that little be on the show, tell your story tab, and the schedule will pop up. If you want to contact Jennifer, all of her information is in the description box, and I really hope that you read her book and feel encouraged by it. That's all we have for today. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.